Now would be a fine time to turn down the cell phones. Boker Tov. Next Tuesday morning, there is a special program here at the center. You can read all about it in the Torah Tidbits of this week for Yom HaTzmaut. I think there's an 8 o'clock davening. This room is usually pretty full for that 8 o'clock davening. Rabbi Gold will be here to give a sicha after a Kriyat HaTorah. It's not Kriyat HaTorah. It's Tuesday. So we have a ceremonial reading of a perek of Haftarah, Leviim, from Yeshayahu perek, till the end of perek Yud, and then Yud Alf Yud Bet, which happens to be the Haftarah in Chutz Laaretz for the last day of Pesach. So it's not that they came up with a new selection. It's very, very appropriate. As you, if you haven't seen it, you'll see it. And Phil Chernowski asked me, as every year, he calls it the closer, to come before the group breaks up by about 10 o'clock. I was invited to say a short sicha. So that's this coming Tuesday. But next Wednesday, the shir is regular. Okay. Today's shir is sponsored by one of our chaverim here, Irvin Cantor, in memory of his mother, Leah Bat Israel David. Leah Bat Israel, how many years? Okay. How many years already? 16. I know that the people in shul, when the people bring a bakbuk, a bottle of whiskey and everything, then everybody's happy. You know, it's a chassidish, it's a Kabbalistic idea. And they say, neshama should have an aliyah. I remember my first yahrzeit, my father, a year and a half ago, said, I didn't want to disappoint the crowd, so I brought a bottle and everybody's very happy. Neshama should have an aliyah. And I'm reminded that my father's neshama had an aliyah in 1993 when he came on aliyah. That was for him, aliyat neshama, and that's what he understood, that's what he believed. Mamashkach. Okay, Sui Foreman reminds me that, was this Sui? Who asked me? Oh, sorry, Jay Shapiro reminds me that there was a subject that was not completed last week. I mean, nobody else remembered, but at least I said, I'll just dedicate just a few minutes to it because I want to get to the subject at hand. And that was the question of why we do not make a Shechiyanu on the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer. Normally a mitzvah that's a seasonal mitzvah. So the next time around, a year later, you make a bracha that Baruch Hashem, you're here to make that, to fulfill that mitzvah. And the truth is, Sfirat HaOmer seems to fall into the category of a seasonal mitzvah that should demand a Shechiyanu. And those who have given the answer that Chutz Laaretz, it's Yom Tov Sheni, it's the second day of Yom Tov, and a Shechiyanu is made on the Kiddush anyway, that's not a good answer. Because here in Eretz Yisrael, it's not Yom Tov Sheni, and we begin Sfirat HaOmer, and there's no Shechiyanu. So obviously, Chazal did not institute Shechiyanu, most probably not by accident, but on purpose. There must be a reason why there's no Shechiyanu. So various reasons have been suggested. One being that if the days of the Omer mark some type of a period of Avilut, of mourning, then it would be inappropriate to say a bracha that's said at the moment of Simcha. So it's true that during the days of Chol HaMoed and Shmi Shel Pesach, there's no Avilut. I've had people who ask me, can I play music on Chol HaMoed? I said, why not? It's Svira. You know, of course, the issue of the Avilut, the mourning period of Sfirat HaOmer, either commences immediately after Pesach until Lag BaOmer, or commences on Rosh Chodesh Iyar until Shavuot. There's a double-edged minhag here on this. And some actually have the Chumrah on both ends. The Vilna Goyen had that, because Gemara talks about the Mipesach V'Aratzeret, from Pesach until Shavuot, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva perished. So some have that minhag that there are no smachot, there are no weddings for the entire duration of the Omer. And that means from after Pesach until Shavuot. So there is a period of Avilut, and as a period of Avilut, we downscale everything that's Simcha, so much so that we try not to bring about a bracha Shechiyanu, a new fruit, new clothing. So that's why we restrict ourselves in the day of the Omer. It's not because of the clothing or the fruit, it's because of the Shechiyanu that we prefer not saying in the time of Avilut. So that's really the classic answer that's been given. There are other reasons that were given, and that is that while we begin counting the Omer on the second night of Pesach, on the 16th of Nisan, but it's really not a mitzvah that you fulfill on that day, according to the Tosfot, but you fulfill it at the end of the Sfirat HaOmer, Tumimot Tiena, and therefore, nobody can sign on the dotted line that he or she's going to make it till Shavuot, so let's just make it to Shavuot, Moseh Shachayanu, on the Yom Tov of Shavuot, and it almost retroactively counts also for the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer. So there's another angle to it, and various Rishonim suggest different reasons why there's no Shachayanu. And unlike the situation of the mitzvah of Nisu'in, can you get a better mitzvah that's defined as Simcha than a wedding, a Chatunah? And yet Chazal never instituted Shachayanu under the Chuppah. And there too, there are about 1,000 different reasons why not. One is, you don't know how it's going to turn out, right? So right now it might be B'Simcha. I must tell you, I was once Masada Kiddushin, where I didn't think it was going to last by the time they get off the chuppah. I mean, I'm serious. It was a very, very unfortunate situation. But usually the chuppah ends okay, the besimcha. But you don't know what's going to be afterwards. So as they say in this country, lech teidag, go see what's going to be. But there are other reasons why there's no shechiyano under the chuppah. But being that there's no shechiyano under the chuppah, the minhag is to force it. To force it with some type of artificially constructed or concocted idea that forces you to say a shachiyano. This is where the minhag of putting on a talis under the chuppah comes in. Put a talit under a new beged chadash, so chatan makes a shachiyano. Of course, in recent years, the kala pipes up and says, what about me? Which is arm said, right? Like my daughter Chana once said, before she got married. She said, the chasen and kala are each 50% of the participants under the chuppah. So why is the ceremony 95% chatan and 5% kala? She had a point. So we sat and engineered a halachically approved chatunah, chuppah, where there would be more active participation of the kala. Those of you who know my chana know that that was pretty much par for the course. One of the things happens to be shachiyanu. And as my daughter pointed out, one second, I just got a new ring, and I just got a ring, I just got a new ring, and I just got some, new dishwasher and a new refrigerator, and gotta make shachiyanu on these things, So why not say it under the chuppah? She wasn't from the feminists to say, okay, I'll also take a talit, that's she's not there. But the argument that you can artificially put the Shechiyanu under the chuppah, just as we take a pre-chadash, a new fruit, put on the table on the second night of Rosh Hashanah. So because there's a safek, if you're supposed to make Shechiyanu or not, so we somehow wiggle out of the safek by having something on the table that for sure you have to have Shechiyanu, and we say Shechiyanu when we make Kiddush and we have in mind the fruit and everything's hunky-dory. So the idea of tacking it onto something else is also known. So that's why the Misadrei Kiddushin, they usually announce there'll be a Shechiyanu, and he'll have in mind, not only the Talit, but also the Simcha of the wedding and everything. But the fact is, Chazal didn't establish it for the Simcha of the wedding, as they did not establish it for the mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer. So again, there are a variety of reasons why Chazal did not make the mitzvah Shechiyanu, and that has to do with the analysis of how we view the mitzvah itself. Is this an individual mitzvah? The Rambam calls each day an individual mitzvah of Sfirat HaOmer, and yet he also doesn't call for a Shechiyanu. So apparently this is something that was pretty ironclad as a coalition of all sources of Ashkenaz and Sfarad. There's no community that I know of that says a Shechiyanu on the Sfirat HaOmer. And especially with the idea that the Rambam suggests that it's just the beginning of the building of the bridge to Chag HaShavuot, that's what I said a few moments ago. So Shechiyanu really is at the Chag HaShavuot with the Matan Torah. That's the real mitzvah. Everything else is in preparation towards Matan Torah. Okay. The topic today, Bi'at Kulchem, which means everybody has come into the land. It's a phrase that's halachic. It's found in the Gemara over and over again in the Midrash Halacha. And the point of departure is the phrase Ki Tavo El Aretz. How do we know that there are mitzvot in the Torah that are Eretz Yisrael bound? Because the Torah introduces the mitzvah V'haya Ki Tavo El Aretz, and when you come into the land. Obviously, from the vantage point of the Torah given in Midbar Sinai, Every mitzvah is ki tavo la'aretz. Not so. There are mitzvot that were binding already in the midbar, in the desert. So some mitzvot, Moshe Rabbeinu says, hold off, v'haya ki tavo la'aretz. So then the question is, how does it happen immediately? I mean, you don't have hundreds of thousands and millions of people stepping over the border at the same time. Does a person become obligated with these mitzvot, Israel, Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvot, immediately? Or is there some time framework that says we have to let some time pass and then these mitzvot activate themselves? So these are discussions of each particular mitzvah. But before we even get to that, let's define, and of course, this is not an accident that I want to talk about some Eretz Yisrael mitzvot the week before Yom HaTzmaut. There are two different categories of Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvot. One category is the agricultural bound mitzvot, or related mitzvot. And that's the giving of truma to the Kohen, Maaseh Rishon to the Levi, Maaseh Sheni to bring 10% that remains to Yerushalayim at your next opportunity. Leket Shikha Peah, the mitzvot of the field that you have to leave for the poor people, and of course there's Maaseh Ani, the tithe of for the poor people every third and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, and then of course Shemitah and Yovel, the 50th year, and then there's Bikurim. There are just so many Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvot. Even challah, we're going to talk about it today. The mitzvah of giving challah is an Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvah. Now, we dealt with challah in Chutz La'aretz as well. I'm sure you remember that. And the reason is that on some of the mitzvot, not all, some of the Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvot, Chachamim instituted that we should continue them in Chutz La'aretz, Shelo tishtakach Torat Chalam Yisrael, so that the mitzvah of Shal Challah should not be forgotten. So it's a type of educational process of keeping the mitzvah of Challah, no different than Shmitat Ksafim, the cancellation of loans in the Shemitah year, is also an Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvah. It's not an Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvah, but it's linked to the existence of the Yovel year. We don't have a Yovel year today, and therefore there's no Shemitat Ksafim at all. But Chazal resurrected the mitzvah on the level of the Rabbanan. Shelo tishtakach Torat Shemitat Ksafim Yisrael. So we shouldn't forget. Now, why Chazal said it on these mitzvot, not the others, you'll have to ask them. In other words, there are reasons, in terms of the logic behind the mitzvot, why Dafka Chazal found in these mitzvot the educational imperative and not others. But the fact is, challah we still maintain till this very day, both in Chutz La'aretz in all cases, and here in Eretz Yisrael, where today, as we'll see in a moment, is still a rabbinic mitzvah. It hasn't been upgraded yet to a biblical mitzvah, but the Mir Zashem, Rav Shem, should give us all good health. We're about 10, maximum 15 years away, where challah might become a biblical mitzvah once again, because of Da'at Kulchem. That doesn't mean I'm a diehard optimist, and in 10, 15 years, this Nefesh B'Nefesh is going to have this smashing success, and they won't have enough room at the airport for the parades, you know, for all of them. But I wish we would have, but, you know, I'm a realistic fellow as well, so that's most probably not going to happen. But there are major, major developments in demography and the population spread of Am Yisrael that lead us to believe that within 10, 15 years, here in Eretz Yisrael, we're crossing the 50-yard line, the 50%, more than 50%, and we will become the majority. So if we become the majority, where's Bi'at Kulchem? So why don't you just flip to the second side, and the last source. This is a funny thing. I mean, I put this in at the end, by the way, when I was printing up the source page, but I realized that it's something that should be at the outset. It's from the Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Shin Pei Hei, Mitzvah Challah. La'frish challah mikol arisa, v'litein ota l'kohen. To take the challah from all batters of dough, and to give it to the kohen. Sh'neimar reshit arisotechem, challah tarimu truma. That's the pasuk in Parshat Shlach. Just take note of the word reshit and the words truma. Those are two key words which become vital in the proper classification of the mitzvah of challah. But we'll get to that in a moment. The mitzvah is to take off, from a biblical point of view, a minuscule. From a rabbinic point of view, there is an amount that we take off. And there is a difference that Chazal made a schedule for private people at home and bakers at Angels and Berman's Bakery, there's a different amount that is taken off and given to the Kohen. So is the mitzvah of Hafrasha, which, let's assume, no matter what level, the Raita, the Rabbanan that we do today, is that linked to the mitzvah of giving to the Kohen? Is it one mitzvah? Lafrish chalam min kol arisa v'litein ota l'kohen, sh'ne'emar reshit arisotechem chala tarimu truma, and the following psukim say you give it to the Kohen. Or is the mitzvah to take off the challah one mitzvah, and the mitzvah of giving it to the Kohen another mitzvah? And by the way, this is why we call the chalot chalot, because not that the challah that we eat is the challah. The challah that we take off, we don't eat. That's Kodesh. But we gave challah, the bread of Shabbat, the nickname challah, because women, more often than not, would be dealing with the mitzvah of chashat challah, baking challahs for Shabbat and Yom Tov. So it became known as challah. Similar, that we can say the Yom Tov of Pesach. Which day in the Torah is Pesach? It's the 14th of Nisan. It's Erev Pesach. Pesach means the day of the offering of the Korban Pesach. So it's really Erev Pesach. So what's the 15th till the 21st of Nisan? Chag HaMatzot. It's never called Pesach in the Chumash. Chag HaMatzot. Yet in rabbinic literature, Chag HaMatzot is called Chag HaPesach. Why? It was probably Zecher LeMikdash. So here too, the idea of why we call it challah. This is just the folklore already. Why we call it challah? Well, we call it challah because women were engaged in the mitzvah of hafrashat challah, so the nickname challah stuck to the baked product of what we call challah today. Fine. So if you see in one sentence, lafrish challah mikol arisa v'litein ota lekohen, and it's the same mitzvah, shin pei hei, so you pretty much can guess that challah is one mitzvah, to take off the part of the dough, and that you give as a gift to the Kohen. Okay, and by the way, challah can also be given after it's baked. It can also be given after it's baked. And I'll give you that's usually an accidental situation. Ui, I forgot to be mafresh challah, so now the question is, can you take off challah from the challah? Take off challah from the challah, right? Friday night, on Shabbat. Can you be mafresh challah on Shabbat? Because mafresh challah from a baked product means plucking off something from the challah that's baked already and putting it aside. So I'll give you just one practical case where that is sometimes what's called the bidi'avad becomes the lachatchila. The de facto becomes that which we do because there's no other choice. If you happen to be part of the extreme minority that prefers to bake matzahs for Seder night on Erev Pesach in the afternoon hours. Now most of us, anybody do that? By the way, here? Nobody. Most of us don't do that. There are a handful of people in Yerushalayim, as a Hidur, as a Chumrah, they bake the matzahs on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Now if you would have a dough and you take off that challah, you know what's going to happen to that challah? It becomes chametz. That part of the dough. And according to most poskim, you already violate Bal Yireh Bal Yimatzeh, and you've created chametz on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. So you can't do that. So what's the suggestion? You bake it as a matzah, and then you break off part of the matzah. You know, obviously you need shleimot, but you can have extra matzahs. So from some of the matzahs that you're not going to use for, say, the night, for the three matzahs, you break off a piece, and that becomes challah. So it's just a scenario where because of Ein Breira, there's no other choice, so you can have a taking off of challah after the product is ready baked. But the Ramban argues with the Rambam. The Chinuch takes it all from the Rambam, the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Mitzvot. The Ramban argues and says, no, it's two different mitzvot. There's a mitzvah of taking off challah. There's a mitzvah of giving it to the Kohen. Now that's not just an academic discussion. It's not like the machlok between the Rambam and the Ramban is Kriyat Shema in the morning and night, one mitzvah, or Ramban says, no, it's two different mitzvot. There, you can explain it philosophically. What's the difference between declaring allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in daytime and at nighttime? The Gemara talks about it through the pasuk of Lahagid Baboker Chazdecha Ve'emunatcha Baleilot. Fine, you can make a lot of shurim on this. Very nice. But in essence, you're reading Shema in the morning, reading Shema at night, both according to the Rambam and the Ramban. So what's the difference if this is one mitzvah or two mitzvah? A very big difference. If there's no Kohen to give the challah to, like today, why don't we give the challah to the Kohen? The same reason why we don't give truma to the Kohen, which is, there are two reasons. What was that? It's not taluy, it's not dependent on Beit HaMikdash. Challah and Truma are not dependent on Beit HaMikdash. No. Safek Kohen. Yefeh. That's the primary. Most people will jump and say Tuma, because a Kohen is not allowed to eat it if he's Tamei, and every person today is what's called presumed Tamei, Becheskat Tamei Mei, because we don't have Para Aduma. So if a Kohen, in any time in his lifetime, was in contact or under the roof of a dead body, that could be any time he visited the hospital, and at that moment somebody died in some ward, and you know, in Shari Tzedek, they put the sign on outside, but you were inside. That's it. It's a fraction of a second. If somebody died in the hospital when you were a Kohen, even as a patient, whatever, you're not going to... I mean, to say for a Kohen to say, I can't go to the hospital because I might become Tamei Mate, you don't want to do that. Now, you might argue that if it's a minor procedure and, you know, there's an outpatient clinic at the hospital, but you can also do it in a local Kupat Chulim, so you might as well do it in a local Kupat Chulim. I can buy that too. There are some hospitals where the outpatient clinic is even a different building. It's not even part of the structure of the hospital. When I lived in Ramot, I had a family Kohanim, and the mother was expecting, and she knew she was expecting a boy from ultrasound already, gave the secret, and she wanted to give birth at home, because she wanted to protect the baby from Tumat Meit. And she asked me a Shaila, what I thought. So look, obviously, God forbid something goes wrong. You know, people have been born since Adam Rishon at home. We know that. But, you know, in a complication in a birth, and you don't have the doctor's aid, you don't have the equipment, this is compromising the life, not the health, the life of the newborn. So how can you allow that to happen? Anyway, because this woman, pushed, I called the then Rav of Hadassah Hospital. He passed away, Rav Rokovsky, he's according to the Racha. And he told me that if she's giving birth in Hadassah, Haratzofim, the delivery rooms and this ward is separated from the main wing of the hospital. So only if this, God forbid, a rare calamity of a woman dying in childbirth, which still can happen, but it's extremely rare occurrence, she doesn't have to worry, and certainly she should be encouraged to go to the hospital and have the baby there, which she did. Unlike my daughter-in-law, who decided to have the baby at middle of the night, and my son in Talmon called the ambulance, and before the ambulance got there, he noticed some women from Talmon walking in with gloves like this. Only my Eitan can pull this off, right? And one of my granddaughters was born at home in Talmon, that's all. And she's a booba, you know. So, Baruch Hashem. And when my daughter-in-law gave birth just 2 months ago, in Florida, so we joked and we kibitzed, did you make it to the hospital? She said she didn't make it to the Cheder Leida. She made it to the hospital. I said, you're getting better. You're getting better. Keep it up, you know. See what happens next time. All right. So the question of a Kohen being Tamei, in all likelihood, and everybody's presumed to be Tamei today. That's one reason we don't give the Kohanim Truma and Challah. And the others, what Jerry said, this Safek. A person is presumed to be a Kohen. Why is it Kohen? Because his father's home is Kohen. His grandfather says he's Kohen. Okay, fine. But that's not good enough to serve in the Beit Mikdash. If you're going to serve in the Beit Mikdash one day, you're going to have documentation. What's called Megillat Yuchasin, Yichus book, a book of pedigree, and to show that you at least come from the Kohanim of Second Beit Mikdash. If you can't bring it back to Aaron HaKohen, fine, but just bring it back to the year 70, okay? Okay, so I'm going to talk, okay, I know the DNA. There were British scientists, they've got the Londoners here, you know. The British scientist that tested it for a gene, a Kohen gene. So I heard from Rabbi Tendler, who spoke about this once in a lecture, and he said that the gene testing, if you test negative, then you are 100% not a Kohen. 100% not a Kohen. That's important to know also for certain Yichus questions, marrying a Giyaret and marrying a Grusha and so on. You're 100% not a Kohen. If you test positive, he said you're 80% a Kohen. 80%. Why? He shows why there was all kinds of mixtures throughout the ages, and it's not foolproof. He said it's not bad, it's something to go on, and you can use that plus perhaps other indications. So it sounds good,
it sounds good, and you want to call yourself a Kohen Miuchas, so perhaps if somebody's looking for a Kohen for Pidyon HaBen, he'd be the person you'd look for, because he's got a better shot at being a real Kohen. This was the Maaseh of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was a Bechor, he himself was a Bechor. So certainly at 31 days, his father redeemed him, Pidyon HaBen. When the Vilna Gaon was a mature person, he met up with a family of Rabbanim Rappaport, who was a claim to be a Kohen Miuchas all the way back to Beit Sheni. So the Vilna Gaon, without making a bracha, did Pidyon HaBen on himself a second time, Misafek. Because who knows if Mr. Cohen, you know, was a Kohen. You know, when this father brought a honorable Kohen to be the Kohen for the Pidyon HaBen. But this fellow, and this Rav Rappaport, don't bother me with now with the family names, was the great, 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 great grandfather of the father-in-law of Rav Goren, the Nazir, Rabbi David Cohen, the father of Rav Shai Yishev Cohen, Zechron the Bracha. They claim to be Kohanim Meyuchasim. Kohanim Meyuchasim. Because of a connection to that, direct lineage to that, that's easy. You know, go back 20 years, per se, the people have done that, I do too. So that's that can be done. And if you could be Miyuchas Le, this Rav Rappaport, then you're home free, and according to the Gra, you're a Kohen Miyuchas. That's pretty good. But I would agree, if somebody tested positive with the Kohen gene, it puts him a notch higher, perhaps, in the Yichus status of absolutely being a Kohen than another Kohen. Okay, so that's really the issue. The issue is, you can't give it to somebody who's not a Kohen, so what do? We burn it, right? We destroy the challah, the truma that we take off. But you know, you're allowed to feed it to animals of Kohanim. A Kohen is allowed to give truma to his own animals. He doesn't have to eat it, but he can use it as animal feed in his own house if he has domesticated animals or whatever. So, you know how much truma is taken off by tnuva in this country? The Rabbanut Rashid, the chief rabbinate, on a national level, takes care of the tenuva, which supplies 60% of agricultural products of this country. It's tons of truma, tons. So there's a deal with the Biblical Zoo here in Yerushalayim. The Biblical Zoo, which is owned and operated by the city of Yerushalayim, sells it to a Mr. Cohen for a nominal one shekel a year, a one shekel a year deal. So it's really owned halachically by Mr. Cohen. And Mr. Cohen is so kind that you can feed my animals with the truma. And there are truckloads of the truma from Tnuva that goes to the Gan Chayot Tanachi, and the animals are fed with it. So these are Heilige Behemus, or what we say every morning in Davening, Chayot HaKodesh. Rofanim v'Chayot HaKodesh. These Chayot HaKodesh, they're eating truma. And one experience at the Biblical Zoo, we once had the grandchildren, that's why they made the Biblical Zoo, for Saba and Safta to do something with the grandchildren, right? So we're at the Biblical Zoo, and there was a madrichat, you know, they have these feeding hours where it's a nice exhibition, and the kids love it. So there were hippopotamuses, and there was a madrichat there. You know, it's very difficult to know if a young lady is datiya, lo datiya. She was dressed work clothing as a madricha there with slacks. Besides, you know, I don't make anything of it. And some kid wanted a piece. They were cutting watermelons in half and then just putting that half watermelon right into the mouth of the hippopotamus. As if, I mean, Mamisha Bahima, you know. Like. So one kid asked for a piece of the watermelon. It was, you know, a pretty interesting question, not a request. So this madricha apologizes and explains the whole business of truma. I'd love to give you a piece, but this comes from the supply that's truma. So only the hippo can eat the truma, because the hippo belongs to Mr. Cohen, who's the halakhic owner of the Gan Chayot. Yeah. And you know, and the kid had to, you know, just take an ice cream instead, you know, never instead of a watermelon.
What? This is why it's great to live here. Oh,
no.
I mean, where could you hear such a thing?
Not in the Bronx Zoo. Okay? Not in the Bronx Zoo. Yeah.
If the kid would have been a Kohen, could he have eaten?
Okay, so if the kid was a Kohen, then you'd have to verify two things. That he's a Kohen. His status, which is not so easy, as I mentioned a few minutes earlier. And his Tumah status. The problem is that sometimes you walk in Yerushalayim,
So the outskirts of the old city, you know what they used to use it for? They used to use it for cemeteries. Nice. So the fact that in modern day Yerushalayim, we built up the city. So you take Sanhedrin, Sanhedrin Mochevet, all these very Haredi neighborhoods, by the way, most of them are built on cemeteries. They really are. And nobody's really given a lot of thought to one second. How are we doing this? But there's a lot of unknown kfarim, subterranean, very subterranean, throughout Yerushalayim. And Tuma is Bokat V'Ola Ad HaShamayim, which means it goes up, doesn't spread out this way. It goes up. That's why if there's a wide enough a pathway in a cemetery, a kohen can walk in the middle. So why can't he just walk to the edge? Because Chazal made a little gzeira of a little bit on the side. But if it's a very wide road in a cemetery and a kohen is going there, I'm not talking about for the levaya of his own parents, where it's a mitzvah for him to go to. But let's say a yard site. He wants to go to the kever of his parents. He's not going to go up to graveside, because that's he's not allowed to do. But the standard, we call kesher ayin, you can visual sighting, that's it. So it depends on the cemetery, it depends on the path. That's why some cemeteries are very careful to allot Kohanim families the first row near the wall of the cemetery. So there's the sons and you know can go for a yard site and be there and have some kesher ayin. We have this problem in the Poland trips, by the way, you know, with Kohanim, where you know a bit of, about at least a quarter of the trip is in cemeteries. And what do you do with a kohen? You tell him sit outside, you know, and he has to know that up front. It's yeah.
What about I've seen a guy in a cemetery, like suspenders and a box, and he's running around. He's a kohen. He's creating his own little wall. And I saw it once, right. And someone explained to me, this is what a kohen does.
I never saw it. Okay, I never saw it. I never saw
it. Anybody ever see it?
Okay, very strange. Okay, so getting just back to the end of source number 9. So according to Ramban, if there's a mitzvah to give, to take off the truma, the challah, or truma for that matter, but in this case, challah, the challah, and there's another mitzvah to give it to the kohen, so in the event that we're going to have a scenario of the majority of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, in a minute you'll see where I get the word majority, then in 10, 15 years, the mitzvah of taking off challah here in Eretz Yisrael will be upgraded to biblical. Will be upgraded, even though we still don't have a kohen to give it to. So you look at the last lines, it says, the last two lines of the page. V'noheget b'scharim t'kevot. This mitzvah is enforced for men and women. Where Eretz Yisrael b'levad b'doraita, biblically in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, as it says, b'och lachem milechem haaretz. It says clearly, lechem haaretz. V'davke b'zman sheYisrael sham. But only when Am Yisrael is there. Klomar, that is to say, rubam. Shenemar b'vo'achem. Now this is a big chiddush, because the chinuch in the 13th century is the first one to qualify the phrase of Chazal, biat kulchem. What is the word kulchem? From the word kol. Now what does it mean? Biat kulchem, everybody's in Eretz Yisrael. It means if you have one guy from Klal Yisrael who's a dafkanik, you know, and he's going to stay outside the borders, so nobody can have the obligation of a mitzvah. I mean, that's absurd. It's really, really absurd. And even though the chinuch doesn't have a source in the Gemara to say so, basic logic dictates that it has to work with the halacha rubo kikulo. The majority is like the whole. We function in Yoredeya with that principle. The majority is like the whole. And if the majority is like the whole, so if the majority of Am Yisrael are living in Eretz Yisrael, that's called biat kulchem. And that hasn't happened in the last 2,600 years. 2,600 years we haven't had that. Because all of Beit Sheni, the majority of Am Yisrael was abroad. And at the end of Beit Rishon, there was already Galut Aseret HaShvatim, the exile of the 10 tribes. So you only had two tribes. You had Yehuda and Benjamin, and partially Levi, the Kohanim. And that's it. So that took place 2,600 years ago, the Galut Aseret HaShvatim. So in about 10 years, and why say 10 years? Because it's a function of certain statistics. One is, two of the statistics are downright negative, and that they are negative population growth of the Jewish people abroad. You have to have at least two children in the family to be on the zero line of population growth. Two children replace the two parents. So if you have three, your population is growing. If you have one, you're declining. The United States, all considered, every type of Jew that you might think,
It's 1.6 Jewish children per Jewish family, which means the Jewish population in the United States is shrinking. True, in the religious and Haredi community, it's growing. We know that. And everybody knows that, you know, given those statistics, the future of American Jewry is to see a complete elimination of secular Jews. Or there might still be Jews on paper, but not much is going to be left. And those who remain will be those who are Shomrei Torah Mitzvot, which today comprise 10% of American Jewry. 10% of American Jewry. That's all it is. And the only place in the world where Am Yisrael is growing naturally is, here we are, right here. The only place in the world with this natural population growth, which means there's on the average more than 3 children per family, and in the religious and the Haredi sector, it jumps between 4 and 5 per family, which means that there are families with 6, 7, and 8. You know, that's what it means. We talk about average or more. So here too, the secular community in Eretz Yisrael is running scared of what the future of this country is all about. But the handwriting's on the wall. So we know it. So that's one statistic, which means the world population, Jewish population, outside Eretz Yisrael is going down. Here it's going up. And there's also some aliyah. And aliyah outweighs yiridah. 35 years ago, unfortunately, it was the other way around. There was a time there was more yiridah than aliyah. But now it's not the case. Now we're getting about 30,000 every year. You don't have 30,000 yordim every year. You have also Yisraeli achozer, which is a phenomenon. All of a sudden, Israelis who sought out their great fortunes, you know, years ago, and discovered that America wasn't exactly a gold mine, and they're coming home, you know, and trying to make it again here as Israelis. So there's Yisraeli Achozer. The government has incentives for such people to encourage them to come back. The population here is growing. We are now 46.5% of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. 46.5. And just compare it, you've heard this from me, the statistics, by Cheney, 5% were in Eretz Yisrael, and 95% were in America. They called America Bava. They had a different name, that's all. But it was America. As Rabbi Yehuda Levi describes in the Kuzari, they had their homes, they had their businesses, they had their farms. They were Bekitza set up and settled. And their grandparents were refugees, right? They were the ones who left Eretz Yisrael. Left. They didn't leave, you know. They were thrown out. They were gurash from Eretz Yisrael. Exiled to Bavel. And the grandchildren were now comfortable. Comfortable. So comfortable people don't always become, you know, idealistic about Eretz Yisrael. And Ezra HaSofer died a frustrated man trying to bring Am Yisrael back. So much so that the Levian, who traditionally were the religious leaders, he, Ezra, expected that the Levian of Bavel would take the initiative, those Kohanim and Levian, to come back to Eretz Yisrael. And they didn't. So he did two things. He slapped a gezerah of Tumah on all of Chutz Laretz. It's called Tumat Eretz Amamim, the Tumah of the lands. It's a rabbinic level of Tumah, hoping, in vain I may add, that the Kohanim would run away from Chutz Laretz and find their place only in Eretz Yisrael, because it's the only place that doesn't have Tumat Eretz Amamim. And to the Levim, he denied them the Maaseh Rishon. Alright, nobody's giving Maaseh Rishon anymore, because Maaseh Rishon is not Kodesh, and a Yisraeli can eat the Maaseh Rishon. We take off Maaseh Rishon and we eat it. The only thing we don't eat is the Truma, and that which the Levi should have taken off to give to the Kohen also, which the Torah calls Maaser, Mina Maaser, the Halacha calls it Trumat Maaser. So what's a tenth of a tenth? 1%. That's why if you look in all the books, and you're taking off Truma Maaser at home, say here in Yerushalayim, 99.9% of the stores, the Truma Maaser is already dealt with. But if you live in a farm where you're not sure if anybody took off Trumas or Maasers, you have to do it yourself. So we take off a trifle more than 1%. The 1% is for the 10% of the 10% that the Levi was going to forward to the Kayan. And the trifle more than 1% is the Truma that I'm supposed to give to the Kayan. And everything else we eat. But in the Nusach it says, and I take off 10% for the Levi. But you don't give anything. You eat it. Because Ezra Sofer said, the Maaseh Rishon of the Levi, you eat. No more Levium. And this is a Class A argument against those who are in religious leadership positions abroad and say, of course I'm in favor of Aliyah, but I'm a Rav in a community, I'm a Rosh Hashiva, I'm a Rosh Kailo, you know, I have an obligation to stay here. Well, that's what Ezra HaSofer was up against. He dies a very, very disappointed person. If you want to hear all about this in detail, so this summer in the
You may Yun Tanakh of Alon Shvut, so I'm giving one of the English shurim on this topic about using the slichot of Asara B'Tevet. Some of you heard part of it already, but I've reworked it. So, but this is something that Ezra Sofer was very concerned about. So here you have Biat Kulchem, which means Biat Rubchem, and let's go back to the first page on top. Yeah.
There's really no way to know what 50% of it is.
Right. It's a rough estimate. It's a rough estimate. How do we know today it's 46.5%? These are estimates. Because the question in America is, who's a Jew? I mean, the Pew report defines all different kinds of people as Jews, who halakhically might not be Jews. Okay, you're right.
But the other way, who are Jews and just not practicing or not registered anywhere as Jews.
Okay, so it's an open-ended question, neo-UD in this respect. But the 50% marker, theoretically, is going to be crossed either at the airport or in the labor room. Right? Watch, my daughter Hannah in obstetrics in Soroka. She's going to say, shucks, it's a Bedouin.
Mostly Bedouin.
She says, yeah, 50% of the babies born in Soroka are Bedouins, right? Okay, so the source number one is the Rambam's detail of all the halachot in the Sefer. So I just printed here Sefer Zra'im. Sefer Zra'im happens to be the seventh book of the 14 books of the Mishnah Torah, and it begins with B'Shem Hashem El Olam. Where does it say Hashem B'Shem Hashem El Olam? Who is it said about? It's not a hard question. Who is it said about? B'Shem, I'll read a few words before. Vayiven sham mizbeach, vayikra b'shem Hashem el olam. Avram Avinu. And most of the time it says, vayiven sham mizbeach, vayikra b'shem Hashem. Where Ramban says that Avram Avinu set up like tables, the lottery booths, at the major intersections, road intersections, and was espousing monotheism. Vayikra b'shem Hashem, trying to get adherence to believing in one God. Remember, we studied this Ramban by Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Lebracha, and I'll mention his name, not only because I love to mention his name, Zichron Lebracha, but tonight is his yahrzeit, the second yahrzeit of Rabban Lichtenstein, Shchodesh Aleph Iyar. So Rabban taught us Ramban. I went to 2 years worth of Ramban Shurim. He said, he was trying to give a description of what kind of personality Avraham Avinu. This is going back to 1972, his second year at the yeshiva, where the Israelis still didn't have a handle on who this Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was. When Rav Aaron gives a sicha and he quotes the English writer John Milton, and an Israeli taps me on the shoulder and he says, "Hu me'arishonim or me'achonim?" So from then in the yeshiva, we called him Rabbeinu Milton, you know. Rabbeinu Milton. So that was later on the Israelis caught on. But, so I remember Rav Aaron was giving a description of Avraham Avinu. So he says, he uses a personality who all of us from New York knew exactly what he was talking about. The Israelis didn't have a clue. Billy Graham. Billy Graham was an evangelist. An evangelist in the 60s, Richard Nixon's, Yoetz, Linyanei Dat, and Ruchaniyut, and so on. Said Billy Graham. There's a Billy Graham. We laughed, and the Israelis said, "Who? What?" And once he equated Avraham Avinu to Chabadnikim, and that was pretty much a good description, a very good description of going out to the crossroads, Rishut Arabim, and spreading the word. Vayikra b'shem Hashem kelolam. Rambam saw himself in the task, in the footsteps of Avraham Avinu. He begins every single sefer that he wrote with the phrase B'Shem Hashem El Olam. He goes back to Avraham Avinu, "I'm doing the Lord's work here and spreading the idea that there's one God." So he writes B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam, and then every book of the 14 books of the Mishnah Torah carries a pasuk either from Tillim or from Mishlei, which speaks the theme of the book. The theme of the pasuk usually has a reference to the name of the book. The name of the book is Zra'im, which is seeds or agriculture. Let's translate it as agriculture. And the pasuk is Tehe Yadcha Le'azreni Ki Pikudecha Bacharti Tilim Perakuf Yutet. Tehe Yadcha Le'azreni.
that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu that your hand should be to help me. Keep kudecha bacharti, because I have chosen your orders, your mitzvot. Le'azreini is ezer. It's not zera. What is the Rambam telling us here? By this very creative use of this pasuk, that the point of zraim is la'azor, to help. The play on words here of ezer and zera. It's all about. If you look at the headline where he says Sefer Shvi, who Sefer Zraim is the seventh book. This is all the Rambam wrote. This is not the printer. Halchotav Sheva. There's seven groupings. Vizeu Siduran, and here it is in order. Halchot Kilayim, Matnot Aniyim, which is Sedakot, Trumot, Masrot, Masar Sheni, Veneta Ravai, Bikurim, Vishar, Matnot Kuhuna, Shebivulin, and Shmita and Yovel. So he divides it into seven different categories. If we look at source 2, this is the Moreh Nevuchim now. In the Moreh Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Lamed Tev, where Rambam's talking about mitzvah rationale, Ta'ameh mitzvot, he says, HaMitzvot asher yichlalam haklal harevi'i. Rambam divides all of Torah into 14 categories of mitzvah rationale. The number 14 should strike a chord, because the Rambam was in love with the number 14. I once mentioned here my suggestion that there is birthday. Rambam was born on Erev Pesach, Yud Dalet Nisan. Maybe there's a good connection. Hey, Masha Kalal Otam B'Sefer Zra'im Mechiburenu. Everything I'm talking about now in the Mishnah Torah, my Mechiburenu, my great compendium, is in the Sefer Zra'im, except for Muvad HaKilayim. He'll say that the Kilayim is going to feature in a different discussion. V'gam din arachim v'charamim v'chein mitzvot asher safarnu milchot melveh v'loveh v'asher safarnu milchot avadim. What the Rambam is drawing our attention to the fact is not there's no direct correlation, it's not absolute, in terms of his division of the 14 categories of the mitzvah rationale and the division of the 14 books of the Mishnah Torah. It's, as we say in Hebrew, pachot deyoter, more or less synchronized. But there are aberrations. There's a reason why I put this over here and I put that over there. So I'm now talking about, I'm going to explain the rationale for the agricultural mitzvahs. Oh, you're going to tell me in the agricultural mitzvahs in the Mishnah Torah, there's kilayim. It also has to do with chemla, with helping. What does that have to do with helping people? It has nothing to do with helping people. I'll explain to you kilayim somewhere else. Somewhere else. So in other words, he tells us up front that there are some exceptions to this classification rule. But he goes on to say in the third line, Elu ha-mitzvot kulam kishetiska tiskakel bahen. You think about it, achat achat, one after the other. Timtzeim galuya ta'elet. You'll figure out immediately their reasons. Kechemlat ha'aniyim v'hadalim v'lazor ha'evyonim b'minim chalukim. There are so many different opportunities to help out the person who's needy. So whether it's outright tzedaka, as we call it tzedaka, whether it's leaving leket shikha and peya in the field, which is some type of agricultural produce in the field, whether it's helping the Kohen and Levi who do not work because they have a spiritual, educational job, Yeruv Mishpatecha LeYakov V'Torata LeYisrael, and therefore they're not on the field, and Am Yisrael is obliged to provide them with parnasah, so that's like helping. They're also poor in the sense financially, so therefore it's part of helping out the Kohen and the Levi, and so too with Shemitah and Yovel. So Shemitah, you know, people talk about Shemitah, the land has to rest, and this and that. The first time Shemitah is mentioned in the Chumash is Parshat Mishpatim. V'ashvi'it tishmetena untashta ve'achlu evyonei amecha. That the first idea of Shemitah is the fields become hefker, and the poor people can just go in and take as they wish. So that's extremely important, that Shemitah is also part of this big overall concept of helping. Tehei yadcha le'azaini ki pikudecha bacharti. I have a Chabad friend. He was then the Rav in the University of Beersheba, Rav Yecheskel Sofer. He lives now in Ramot, in Yerushalayim here. He once told me, after he had heard me once speak about all the connections between, the internal connections between the books of the Rambam. Why is one connected to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, all the way to 14? I have a whole theory of what connects all the books, and these psukim become very helpful to make that understanding. Well, what's before and what's the continuation? So after I mentioned this pasuk, Teyatcha le'azreini, and the play on the word Zra'im and Ezra, he said maybe that's why in the morning in Tefillah we say Zorei Atzdakot.
Zorea Tzedakot. It's a very good idea, very nice idea.
And now, in source number 3, Sefer HaMitzvot, as I said last week, for the reason that we've assembled here today, Sefer HaMitzvot. So the Rambam says in Mitzvah, Positive Mitzvah 133, Mitzvah Kuf Lamed Gimel, he, Shetzivanu lafrish chala me'arisoteinu, to take off the chala, v'litna l'kohen. This is where the Sefer Chinuch got the idea that it's one mitzvah, against what the Ramban, his own Rebbe, listed as two mitzvot. And this is what it says in the Chumash, Reishit arisotechem chala tarimu truma. There's a masechet, and the next masechet, Orla, all the dinim are there. Einach chovah min haTorah, ela be'eretz Yisrael levat. Okay, it's an Eretz Yisrael bound mitzvah, because it says, Bavoachem el haaretz. Okay. The question is, where does the Rambam talk about the laws of challah in the context of the Mishnah Torah? So if I just scan the Sefer HaMitzvot, which we always find of some interest, so Kuf Lamed Gimel, I just opened up to it, so Kuf Lamed Gimel is preceded by Kuf Lamed Bet, right? So Kuf Lamed Bet is the Sivush, is still the end of its Bikurim. It's Bikurim, and before Bikurim is the mitzvah of giving maser. For maser is the mitzvah of maser sheni, and then there's truma. And it's all part of, after he finishes truma and bikurim, he talks about challah, and then he talks about shemitah. Okay, so it's there. It's in the context of the mitzvot. If I were to guess, without knowing, where in the Mishnah Torah, if he doesn't have a kovetz, a unit called Hilchot Challah, which he doesn't, he's going to talk about it in the context of another mitzvah, which mitzvah would I most likely find the discussion of challah? The answer most probably would be the laws of truma. Because the Torah calls it challah tarimu truma. Not only is it called a truma, but the halachot of the truma, of the challah, are equivalent to the halachot of the truma. You give it to the kohen, and if you're not a kohen, you can't eat it, and so on, so on, so on. There's a halachic equation between challah and truma. Similar, let's say, to one of the categories that indeed are mentioned is the laws of maaser sheni and netta revai. Maaser sheni is after I've given the truma to the kohen, given the maaser rishon to the levi, and then I take an additional 10%. And in the next opportunity, I take out Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. Now, if around the corner is Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Aleil L'Regel, Yofi. But if it's a few months away and there's no refrigeration, and the fruits might spoil. So the halacha is, you redeem it on money, and you eat the fruit, and it's chulin, it goes back to, you know, no problem. And then you take the cash, you go to Yerushalayim, and you have to buy food. You don't have to buy fruits and vegetables. You go to Makola and buy ice cream. That's what you can do. You can go to New York Bakery on the Karenaya Kayemet. Highly recommend it. Okay? Closest thing to Dunkin' Donuts. I just discovered it the other day, by the way. So that's what you do. You buy chazarai, nasharai, eating. You have to eat it here in Yerushalayim. Food stuff. So that's maaser sheni. What's netta revai? Netta revai has something to do with, it's not truma maaser, it's a fruit tree. You have a fruit tree. So first 3 years, it's off limits. You're not allowed to eat from the fruit. You're not allowed to derive benefit from the fruit. Or look, the fourth year, Kodesh Hilulim Hashem. You have to take it to Yerushalayim. And if you can't take Yerushalayim, you can redeem it and cash. Cash, go to Yerushalayim, buy ice cream. Fine. Don't quote me that you have to buy ice cream. You can buy ice cream. But if you want to buy fruits and vegetables, buy fruits and vegetables. But that's your problem. Beseder. That's called netta revai, the planting of the fourth year, from the word revi'i, from the fourth year. But there's really no similarity between maaser sheni and netta revai, except for the halachot. The halachot are identical, mamish identical. Take it up to Yerushalayim, if you can't do it, you can redeem it, same halachot. So the Rambam says, I don't have to write hilchot maaser sheni and hilchot netta revai. I can do one unit, hilchot maaser sheni vin netta revai. If there are some differences, I'll point it out, but the bottom line is this is a halachic equation. So I'm writing it once. So you would expect, because of this halachic equation between challah and truma, that's where the Rambam would talk about challah. But he doesn't. Where does he talk about challah? Anyone would take a guess?
Well,
And yes. And let me just preface by saying, the Rav's son-in-law, Rav Professor Isidor Twersky, Zichron Levracha, in his monumental work that came out in 1980, Introduction to the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam, translated into Hebrew in 1992, Mavol Mishneh Torah LeRambam, he has in his introduction that he has identified five unique features of the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam. After he says that, he quotes a line in the Me'iri, Rabbeinu Menachem HaMe'iri, late period of the Middle Ages, late 13th century, Provence, southern France, and he writes a whole parish on Shas, and in his introduction to Masechet Brachot, comments about the uniqueness of the Rambam. And four out of five things that Rabbi Twersky writes about in the book, the Me'iri already said it, and Rabbi Twersky admits that I came to identify these five features before I saw this Me'iri. I'm going to believe him. He's saying Baruch Shekivanti. But he does point out that the Me'iri uses the word four times, Chidesh. Chidesh means there's something novel here. V'hu Chidesh, V'hu Chidesh, V'hu Chidesh. One of the Chidushim of the Rambam was classification. What's called Miyun, classification. That's why emergency rooms, by the way, are called Cheder Miyun, because they classify you. All right, you're the emergency, you're less emergency. And the first thing they do is they do a miyun, you know, who comes first. It's not who comes first gets served, but who's in worse shape gets served first. That's the miyun. So the miyun of the halachot, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did a miyun of Shisha Sidre Mishnah. Fine. The Rambam is not bound to that necessarily. Does his own miyun, his own classification, the 14 books. So he opens up everything, and you have subject matter of one Masechet, for example, Masechet Yoma. Masechet Yoma is about Yom Kippur. So it talks about three things. It talks about the Kohen Godel on Yom Kippur. It talks about the day of Yom Kippur as a Yom Kadosh, about the fasting on Yom Kippur. And then there's a day of Tshuva, which is another aspect of Yom Kippur. Rambam talks about all three matters in three different locations in the Mishneh Torah. Hilchot Tshuva here, Shvitat Asor, the Shvita of the 10th day of the month, which is Tishrei, somewhere else, and Hilchot Avodat Yom Kippurim in Beit HaMikdash activity, somewhere else. That's what the Rambam does. He spreads it out as he sees fit. So the Rambam was really into classification, gave a lot of thought to it. Rambam speaks about Challah. If you just look at source number 4, you would have figured it out. It's Hilchot Bikurim, Perakei. Bikurim. Why is challah in bikurim? It says mitzvah tasei lafish truma min ha'isa, to separate the truma from the dough la kohen shenema reshit arisotechem challah tarimu truma. Why does he put in bikurim? Because in ilchot bikurim, all you have to do is open up the whole Rambam ilchot bikurim and see what does he have there. Obviously bikurim, but he has everything else that the Torah says reshit. First thing, so he has pidyon haben, he has. Reshit Hagez, which means the shearing of the wool. Every time the Torah uses the word Reshit, the first order, the first thing, the Rambam makes a case that there's something very unique about being the first. And the first has to do with sacrificing that which is sentimental to you. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the Korban of Hevel. The Hevel Hevi Mibchorot Tzono Umichel Vehen. He understood to give the Bechor. What did Kayin bring? Mipri ha'adama. It was a random sampling of some fruits and vegetables, because he was the farmer. And yeah, some smashed tomatoes. That's okay. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's not going out to lunch anyway. So it's just a korban. You know, and these tomatoes are on their way to Osem to make them to ketchup. So I'll bring this as a korban, right? Why should I waste sugalef, grade A tomatoes on a korban? That's money in export. I'll sell it to the shvakim in America or Europe. So Kadosh Baruch Hu does not accept the korban. And that korban of Kayin was rectified in the mitzvah of Bikurim. Reshit Bikurei Admatcha Tavi Beit Hashem Elokecha. So the Rambam in Hilchot Bikurim talks about everything that's a reshit factor. Challah is Reshit Arisotechem Tarimu Tatum Truma. That's why it's there. That's why it's there. And I actually have a source. I can't do it now. I'm going to run out of time. But on the second page, in source number 8 in the Gemara, when I was once teaching Masechet Kiddushin, Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Bet, there seems to be a remez, an inference at the end, Maybe we'll have some time. You know what? We're gonna use these pages next week because there's still a lot of material on this, and I'll make reference to this Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin, where it may have tipped the Rambam to think that Challah and Bikurim are first cousins and they belong together in the book, and not to discuss Challah in the context of Mitzvat Truma, which what we're trying to do here is penetrate the Rambam's laboratory of why he did certain things and why he put certain things in certain places. And next week we're really going to penetrate the Rambam's laboratory, why the Rambam sometimes brings his final product back into the library and he does this little literary surgery and he doctors up some sources and things get changed. So we're going to do that next week, okay? So you can put the pages back on the chair. I'll be happy to bring it to you for next week. Okay. Say that.